Artistic director Tony Smotis and Academy Award-winning actress Olympia Dukakis team up to re-envision Shakespeare's The Tempest, a Shakespeare and Company in Lenox, filled with moving, funny, and enchanting moments, the underpinnings in this fantastical world, much like our own, are steeped in mystery, darkness, and the unknown.
Smotis' take, set in the 1940s, aligns the magic and mystery of the island with the often tumultuous relationships between family with a twist. Ms. Dukakis plays Duke Prospero as a woman.
And speaking of family, Olympia's brother Apollo also shares in the production and stars. It is a pleasure to welcome Olympia and Apollo Dukakis, as well as Tony Smotis, to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. What an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
This has been quite a show for us, I have to say. It's been absolutely amazing, and it's very nice to wrap it up in such fine style. Tony, let us begin with you of how you became, when you started to think that this could be a possibility of working on The Tempest with Olympia.
Well, what was really amazing is this: it's a process that started actually years ago when an Olympia, I won't go back to the beginning when we were, she was my mentor at NYU, but about 5 years ago, we actually started plotting. And more recently, we finally had a calendar opening an available slot to, we could get Olympia here, and The Tempest seemed like the best choice. And it was really amazing once we started working on it, all things started falling into place, and we were even able to get her brother here, Apollo, too. So it was just really amazing that it took years, but here we are, and it's all happening.
And before we get to them, I just want to give you a compliment, Tony, for what you have been able to do in terms
that is
of this
very
transition.
True. Very true.
And
bravo.
Great applause
bravo.
To you, Tony. Yeah,
thank you.
It's wonderful.
It's
thank
quite
you.
An accomplishment.
Yeah. Given your ties, obviously, to Massachusetts, Olympia, and in the Bay State, how much was Shakespeare and Company and even Tanglewood on your radar?
Well, I've spent years at Williamstown when Nico Sakharopoulos, another Greek, was running the theater. So I knew the area very, very well. But my coming here all has to do with Tony. I mean, I really loved what he's done here. I mean, the changes he's made, and the idea of working together. That somebody who's been a student of yours a million years ago and has developed and evolved in the way that Tony has is what is it? It's like sending your bread in the water and it comes back buttered or something. It's like that.
Thank you.
What was it? Can you really remember what he was like?
I can.
Well, he was unbuttered, apparently.
Yeah, I was.
No. I was unformed, to say the least.
No, he had always a terrific spirit about him. There was always this energy and this spirit about him that I valued. There were other things that I, felt were important, but that was always there. He walked in the door with that.
And obviously you see a lot of students, but do you just get that sense at the end of time that, okay, these people are going to be okay?
No, I was too much wrapped up in myself. I'll be honest with you. I mean, the end of the year, the end of the 3 years that Tony was there, along with Rocco and along with another actor, Greg Cole. By the way, the three of them were founding members of Shakespeare and Company.
Rocco Sisto.
And Rocco Sisto, Dennis Krause, Nick, and Kevin Coleman, right?
And Rocco Sisto was in the play, too. So that's another thing. Every night I get to look at Rocco's eyes. It's like really something.
It really is.
Yeah.
And working with your brother, which...
Well, it's almost impossible to say how much that means to me. It's just... we have years. We founded a company together in northern New Jersey.
The whole theater company in Montclair.
Montclair, New Jersey. Right.
Where Tony acted in. He did a show there back in the 70s.
Yes, I did.
So we've been, Apollo and I have been together for a long, working side by side. And we've directed each other. We've acted with each other.
But as the years go on, it gets to be a real gift to be able to find a situation where we can actually work together again. And Tony made it possible. Through this whole event that it almost didn't happen for various reasons. Right. But I'm so glad it did, because not only being with Tony, I mean, I knew Tony for many years as an actor and as a friend, but I've seen him operate here as an artistic director. And as I said it before, it's like a revelation. It's eye-opening to see to see him, how he functions as a...
And the changes he's made here are extraordinary.
Talk about that. Talk about that for a minute.
Well, this has really become a festival.
Yes.
There are all these plays that are being done of different genres.
It's a destination.
A destination, yes, a destination.
For people, for audiences and for actors as well, right?
Oh, right, right.
You know, it's capital D destination.
Yeah. Well, it's been great too, because you know, I've been able to express for myself personally the new plays that we wanted to do this year. We have, you know, world premieres and so many new works standing side by side by the classics, by Tartuffe, as well as our Shakespeare offering. So it's been there's just a wealth of things for people to see, and you know, we're not a one-trick pony, and that's what's so wonderful, is a family could come and enjoy its day, as well as, you know, high art.
And you've been so open to the community. I can tell you that it's extraordinary how generous Tony and Shakespeare and Company have been to everybody, but also the great magic of the fiscal turnaround.
Yes, well, that's been remarkable.
His spirit. That's what made this happen.
Thank you. I mean, it was, you know, when I came here and we were, you know, $10 million in debt and, you know, looking at throwing the keys on the table, so to speak.
Sure.
And in 3+ years, I've had an amazing board, a group of overseers and donors, and the whole company has come together to erase that debt. So that we're now standing on solid fiscal ground and looking towards an even brighter future. So I'm so proud of that. I can't even begin to tell you.
Deservedly so.
In a day and age when theaters are closing right and left across the country, for something like this to happen and to grow and flourish is great. And to be valued by the community. And I think the community does value. And especially since you're opening it up.
That's right.
Beyond Shakespeare, and which will include audiences that respond to those kinds of plays,
and
new plays.
That's right. And then we woo them in. And then we go, oh, my God, The Tempest is actually
wonderful. Yeah. But I have a very important question to ask, if I may. And I love both of your first names, Olympia and Apollo.
Playmates of the gods.
And somebody
said to me, you were named to be Playmates of the gods.
So what were your parents thinking when they gave you those names? Do we know that?
Obviously, they loved antiquity. They loved what they considered to be their Greek roots and background. Both my parents were born, and they were immigrants, and Apollo and I are first generation.
Mm.
And my father loved the classics, and my mother as well, but my father was kind of more of a scholar. And so it didn't seem strange to them to name us. I think because they thought we would probably grow up in a Greek neighborhood, in a Greek ghetto. And what do they call it? The half acre. It used to be called the half acre in Lowell. It's just where we were born.
Sure. Now, Johnny Cash sang a song called A Boy Named Sue, in which he Well, you probably have no idea where I'm going with this, but to be an Apollo.
I'm afraid.
To be
an Apollo
or an Olympia growing up in Lowell or in a
well,
mixed
at least area. It's not my name is not a female name. No. Hers isn't a male name.
No.
But I know what you mean.
Yeah.
But mine is like not male or female. Olympia is a plain. There's a mountain Olympus. I mean,
people first became knowledgeable of my name when. We started having the moonshots, Apollo 11,
sure.
Apollo 10.
Oh, that's true.
And they could identify then. It made sense to them then. But
and Rocky's opponent.
That's right. That's
it was
Apollo Creed. Yeah.
And if it gets in the way, then Tony just changes the vowel, apparently.
That's right.
That's what you do,
that's
right?
That's what I do. That's right. And that was a stroke of genius, really, in that what we've discovered is the opportunity to do this play with Olympia really just opened up The Tempest to so many different and deeper meanings in the play, because with Prospero becoming Prospera, it really did shift the whole landscape of the play and made it accessible to our audience in a completely different way.
And now that had been done before.
Oh, yeah.
That female perspective had been done before.
That's correct.
But here you have a production, which I love, because the New
not
York...
Not necessarily.
Well, not like
females
you're doing.
Females have played it, but whether or not it had a perspective is... for
absolutely.
Example, the movie had no perspective. Helen Mirren played it, but the director did not deal with the text and or the visual aspect in a way that had a female perspective. You just put a woman in it. It doesn't work that way.
And we were
got to see what the reverberations are.
So at what point do you say, okay, this is how, because the two of you have these conversations, right, of how it should be, of giving it more
what
depth.
It might be. Should is a hard word.
Yeah.
But what might be.
Well, you have a dream, don't you? You have an idea of what it could be.
But we also worked that we actually had to talk through that because, you know, we come from different backgrounds. And,
right.
And so we really had to find a way to, through the language of the play and the rehearsal, to find out exactly, Joe, what that would be, because it wasn't clear always.
Okay, for those who are listening on the radio, I want to be their ombudsman for one moment. Could you explain what we are talking about here?
Well, when you change the lead character of Prospero to Prospera, it's not just as Olympia's saying, not just a gender shift. What happens is you've now taken the play, and the relationships have gone from father-daughter to mother-daughter, and that actually having a mother figure in the play changes all the relationships in the play itself, from brother to the evil brother Antonio, what that means doing things something to his sister, as well as then Olympia as with Caliban taking.
And where does the revenge come from if it's a woman?
Right.
What is the need for that? You know.
That's right. So all those things really changed the play on a much deeper level, and we just found it fascinating because we talked about antiquities, we talked about the relationships, the prehistory, and so many different things really. In the rehearsal room that I think are reflected in the piece itself, too.
You know, it'd be interesting. I don't know if we have had any, are we going to have any talk backs with the audience?
I think
like with the actors on stage?
Tomorrow night.
Because it might be interesting to see what an audience brings to seeing a mother and a daughter relationship, how they view it, you know, as opposed to seeing a father and a daughter.
That's correct.
And, you know, I think an audience brings their perspective, and well, she should be this way, why is she being that way? You know, it would be interesting to hear an audience take on what they get from it.
Well, have a plant in the audience to ask that question, because otherwise God only knows what you'll be asked.
What's it like to work with Cher?
Right, yeah, there you go.
Exactly.
Absolutely. When you...
it's great, isn't it?
when you look at I thought it was interesting, the New York Times in their review, Ben Brantley, saying... unusually cozy.
Oh, Olympia is reacting because the actors tend not to want to discuss reviews.
No, so
read them.
No, no.
I'm glad that's good.
This is something, and it's on, you know, it's the front page of the website. They're using it, you know, of Shakespeare and Company's website. I think that's interesting because it is a family, it's very much a family affair. You
it
get that
really
sense.
It is. That's the one thing about the play. So many people have said to me, well, The Tempest has not always been one of my favorite plays, and they've walked out of that play feeling hopeful
and
deeply
moved.
Deeply moved by the play. In fact, someone just wrote to me and said the last 20 minutes of the show, they found themselves tearing up and crying because it was so moving. And that's what the theater experience, in our theater especially, because the audience is all around you, you really get a chance to actually feel the language and feel the actors and the experiences they're going through. So it's a remarkable time to have this play on our stage, and I couldn't have asked for more extraordinary actors to carry to carry this play to our audience.
And at the same time, it's riotously. Did you see the show?
No, I haven't yet.
Oh, riotously funny.
It is funny
as well as being moving. So. It's really, I think, the most audience-friendly, accessible Shakespeare I've ever been in.
I want to talk about that because you're so close. I mean, it's a small theater, and you guys are great actors. What does it feel like to be that close to the audience?
Well, it's both. It's exhilarating and it's nerve-wracking. It's both. Because you can see them when they're trying to cover a yawn. And, and you can see them when they've, you know, all these different things. Kids come and the legs are shaking and stuff like that. But but when they are moved and they're paying attention and they're captured by the play, you feel how present they are and how weighted everything is for them, and And that makes you, that kind of is very encouraging and makes you, well, I hesitate to use the word inspiring, but it is. There's something inspiring about it.
Would you give us the opportunity to, and this is both to everyone's credit, and this seems to be something that Shakespeare has been so good at, of respecting the language and giving us, the audience, a chance to immerse ourselves in it?
Oh, that's great.
Well,
I couldn't think of a better thing to have here.
Yes, I.
But is that conscious on your part as a director?
Well,
yes.
Oh, absolutely. Everything, you know, when you're working on the play itself, you're really, I mean, for myself personally, I'm always trying to put myself in the audience's position. Never to approach it from either, you know, an academician or someone who knows a great deal about it. I try to sit there and let the story and the language really work on me as an audience member. And that to me is, you know, probably one of the greatest gifts I have as a director is that I love just, you know, being there as an audience member. And so when it makes me laugh or it makes me cry or I get involved, you know, or I see the actors really working to find a part of themselves creatively that goes deeper than just the experience of the moment, it's a true blessing to be in the room, and that's what I feel like it is to be a part of the theater.
Now, on a more mundane level.
Yes.
We must.
Give me kids.
Oh, he's going to ask you, how was it to work with Cher?
I wouldn't dare.
Actually, it was quite lovely.
So has a cell phone gone off in the audience?
Oh, yes, of course.
And what do you think when that moment comes?
Nothing, I just go on. You can't stop to get upset and angry and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, of course.
So, because the rest of the audience around them is going, they're attacking that poor Lynch person the moment that it happens.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just
so you don't have to go all Patty
LuPone.
Patty LuPone, you're saying?
Oh, yes. They don't have to stop the show or, you know, berate the person.
No, I know.
What did she say? How dare you?
How dare you? Right. Well, she basically,
that's for another.
Dress them down, let's say. But, you know, that entity that is the audience, and because you are so close to them, that time when they first are entered into the equation. Now, you've countless productions. Does that ever fail to surprise you of what they add to it?
Listen, I was a founding member of the Charles Playhouse, which is, by the way, still going on in Boston. And I went through this period where I felt like if the audience did things, I had to confront them. I mean, we all go through them. And these people were talking, and it was so loud, and I was kind of, finally I turned to them, and I said, only one person can talk at once here. Either you're talking or we're talking. I mean, it was like, and this poor woman said, what did you say, darling? That was my lesson.
That's it.
This poor woman was just trying to, this was in the days before they passed out those hearing things. What did you say, darling? I felt like 2 cents. 2 cents.
But following up on Joe's question, does the character of the audience change every night, and do you react to that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the first preview, we were, a lot of us were very scared and concerned. We really hadn't had a run-through with costumes, lights, sets, and the language. We hadn't had one, I don't think.
No, there we were.
But it was received so warmly that night that it gave us confidence and encouragement. First previews are always a little scary because you've been in a room with just about maybe 30 people, 20 to 30 people, and all of a sudden you're a room of 400. So, and everything, you know, it's a whole other element. And I always, you know, I think most actors get a little tense. Then the next night it gets easier. Then you reach the hurdle of the opening night, which is fraught with even more, you know, because it's so important.
Right.
And then when you get past the opening, you can really start delving into the play and enjoying it and deepening it for yourself and getting even more and more confidence.
But one night the audience has a different character than the next night.
Right.
Right. Absolutely,
What makes you say that?
Well, I've just seen it. I mean, I've seen, you know, that there are some times when people are so, you know, enthusiastic from the first day as a teacher. You know, you feel, you see that first class, you've done it, and you say, oh, this is going to be a good one. Or you say, uh-oh.
You're right.
And that has its own ramifications in you.
Yeah, so the audiences are different. That doesn't mean you change what you do.
Uh-huh.
You continue to play the play for the reasons why you want to do the play. You have to hold on to what it is that you, what it is that makes you come on that stage. And if the fact that they don't want to laugh as much, the fact that they're noisier than other places, I mean, an audience has put down its money. It can have whatever experience it wants.
That's right.
It's not up to us to manipulate the audience. The thing about that is if you stop trying to manipulate an audience, you then don't have to manipulate yourself. And you cannot imagine what a freedom comes when you stop doing that. And you can walk on stage to have the experience to engage yourself in a way which inspired you in the beginning. You don't have to let go of that. You know, I see there are some actors who are interested in how many laughs they get and et cetera, et cetera. And that's a kind of tyranny that I think actors have to free themselves from.
I think it takes a long time to get to that point,
right,
though, because a lot of actors, like you say, will be disappointed if you don't get a laugh. You've been getting a laugh at a certain point, and like you say, this audience, they don't respond. And you wonder, well, did I do something? Was my timing off? Was there something off with me? And that's not necessarily true. We've had audiences, there was one that had, wasn't as demonstrative as others. And then at the very end, they stood up. And we've had audiences that laugh hysterically, and they don't stand up, you know. So.
And I want their names.
Yes. Go track them down, for goodness sakes.
That's right.
The Tempest runs at Shakespeare & Company's Tina Packer Playhouse through August 19th. Olympia, Apollo Dukakis, and Tony Samotas, we love that you're here, and we thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
A delight.